Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni, joined by Cody Thompson, my regular co-host. How you doing, Cody?
Doing great, Pat, here in the office.
Great to have you in the office. And we've got our buddy, Bo Johnson, too. How you doing, Bo?
Oh, I'm doing great. Good to see you guys.
It's an all-male podcast today, although Karen is with me here, keeping me on track, writing me notes and reminding me. And we've got Matt Lencioni, our engineer. Not that Matt is also a male, but he's not on mic today. So how you doing, Matt? Thumbs up? Matt's giving me a thumbs up. Okay. Hey, Cody, what are we going to talk about today?
The title is Layoffs Done Wisely.
That's right. This is not an easy one or a fun one by any means, but there are layoffs happening. There have been for the last 3 years, 4 years, but right now it seems like there's a lot of companies laying people off. And I know I just read a story about a bunch, 12,000 people getting laid off at Google, I think. And many of them were waking up in the morning and seeing that their cell phones didn't work and that they didn't have access to their information. And then going on into the newspaper and finding out that people were getting laid off. And that's how they know they were laid off, which is a terrible thing for so many reasons, especially from companies that often tout themselves as being so concerned about employees. But I've often said, I've worked in the Valley long enough, the companies that often do the most extravagant things for employees are the ones that do the most egregious things when things turn south. And so we thought, let's talk to people about how to do layoffs wisely. And of course, human dignity is always the centerpiece of this, and how we can learn about how to do layoffs better by looking at the way we hire, because there's a lot in common with hiring and the way we do layoffs.
Yeah, before we talk about even how those two things are related, it seems important to distinguish that we're not talking about individual firing, and we're also not talking about individual feedback. We've covered those topics on the podcast before. Right. It feels important to be able to separate or sort of distinguish the difference between firing in that way and layoffs, which of course layoffs just means more people. But Pat, what else is a distinguisher for you in this conversation?
No, that's a great, it's different when it's for behavior or performance or something like that. That's a very different topic. We're talking about like a company realizes the economics of our business, the finances of our business make it the right thing to do for our viability to reduce our headcount. And it's a reality in business. We hope people do it for the right reasons, but we're talking about how do you go about doing it with wisdom for people's dignity and for the good of the company. And so let's start. Can we talk then, Bo, about hiring?
Yeah, I'm so interested to see how you connect these two ideas.
So, and we're not going to go into detail, but the first thing we always talk about, right, Cody, is first hire for cultural fit. Get the right people on the bus, as Jim Collins says. Hire for fit, you know, and then train and adjust for skills, which means behavioral interviews, not a resume. Have real honest conversations and really understand who the person is and whether or not they fit your values. That's your first step.
Yeah. And I find this this conversation is very much connected because there's more often than not, you think, oh, hey, maybe companies had clarity at the beginning in the hiring process, and maybe they brought the right people into the organization based on cultural fit. And then when you hear about layoffs, I know my reaction is, boy, I hope they fired the right people. I also think, boy, I hope they hired all the right people. And that doesn't always happen. Even when you have levels of clarity, you're earnest in the interview, you know, people can change or present differently. You scare them with sincerity in the initial interview to say, here's what it's like to work here and here's what we value. And that is where these things get connected, is that if you're ideally in the perfect scenario, you've hired well. And so that makes layoffs just as painful, but hiring well starts with cultural fit. And that's also where it comes into this conversation as it spills into layoff.
Right, right. So you hire for cultural fit. Now, skills matter, right? And in Working Genius, we're like, now make sure that this person fits here. Now get them on the right seat on the bus, right? Because you can hire somebody with a good cultural fit, but if there's not a seat for them or you have them in the wrong seat, their performance isn't good, their dignity isn't high, their morale and joy and energy isn't high. So hire them because, first of all, they're a cultural fit. Find the right seat on the bus for them. And then onboard them and teach them what the culture is and how to succeed there and make sure they're well managed and all of those things. So that's a very simple process. Cultural fit, get them the right seat, and then do an onboarding process that's to help them get comfortable, because that doesn't happen just intellectually overnight. It takes a while for people to adjust, right?
Yep.
So the corollary of this around laying people off needs to start with an understanding of, are we first looking at the cultural fit of these people and making decisions based on that? But that's often not done. And I think a lot of people would say, well, I don't know if that's actually realistic.
Yeah.
And I think the default is, oh, we'll just get rid of an entire department or division, or we're going to ask everybody to cut 10% off the top or 20%. And so that sounds like a lot of work, I think, Pat, to people. Cody, what are you thinking?
I would just think, like, if the conversations you're having around laying off are, show me an org chart and a P&L statement of each of those business units, and that's how we're going to start this conversation, that's the wrong start, right? I mean, the goal is, like, to make this as practical as possible. If we were in a room, Pat, we would often talk about this conversation, even if, you know, as we're developing clarity and the values around that organization and who they want to be, we would say, like, hey, let's name some rock stars in your organization and some misfits. And that's not because we are thinking, like, this is not performance-based, but when we put these values on the board, tell us who are, or even as we're discovering the values, we'll say, tell us the people that if you could duplicate them 100 times over, you would hire every one of them. And typically we write, you know, 6, 7, 8 names up there, and then we start to distill these characteristics. And that's similar, that should be involved in this conversation, you know?
Yes. See, if you don't know who your top performers are and your top cultural fits are along the way, then when you come to lay people off, it's a crapshoot. And that's a really irresponsible thing for a company to do. And so many of these people go, like you said, 10% or cutting that department or this department. That's unwise on so many levels. And if people say, well, that's an awful lot of work, it's like, yeah, it ought to be. And if you need to spend 2 weeks working late at night, really going through the employees who are going to be affected by this and understanding which ones are probably the best cultural fits. Now that means you need to know what your culture is. So yes, it's work and it's worthwhile. And secondly, to do it the other way is lazy. It's really bad for your company, not to mention the dignity of the people you're letting go.
Well, I think as you describe that, of course, it does sound like more work. And it sounds a little bit like a nice to have of, oh, that sounds like the kind of thing really, really good leaders would do if they had extra time. But everything that we do reinforces who we are. And so how you fire and who you fire communicates something to both the person, of course, that's leaving, but it also communicates a lot to the people who are left behind.
Yeah. This is our culture, but it's like, no, we're going to figure out what your culture is when things get tough and how you go about it. Yeah, Cody?
Yes.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that's exactly the conversation is, if you don't start with what's at stake, and what's at stake is not, oh, you know, 1,000 people or however many people are going to lose their job. That is one of the things that's at stake for sure. But the other things that are at stake are like, what about the company after a horrific event like this? So when we downsize or shrink and who's left there and what message are we sending? Like all of these things are, you know, part of this conversation and need to be told at the beginning of like, here's what's at stake if we don't do this wisely.
Right. And I want to get to that, but that is so, so important. Let's go through, like, so let's just say that we're doing a layoff and we say, okay, we need to cut, we have a company of 10,000, we need to cut 1,000. We need to do 10%. That's a big layoff. Okay, before we go through this, let's go ahead and look at the people that in the past, and if we've not done it before, then we got to do it now, who we may have been concerned that their behavior and performance didn't really jive with the culture. And even though at the time, maybe they were above the line, they're closer to the line that they're not above. And so we need to prioritize those people. Okay, we're not going to just do by department or anybody else because that's a terribly inefficient, ineffective way to do that. The second thing we have to consider is, do we have a role for this person given their working genius or their talents? Because you might say, wow, Fred is a fabulous guy. He fits the culture and we love that guy. But these are his skill sets. We're not doing that anymore, given the state of the economy or our business. And though we'd normally want to keep him, we don't really have a place for him, given his skill sets. We might lay him off too, but what we say to him is going to be very different in the sense that we'd say we would keep you if we had more jobs that fit for you because we think you're fantastic. And if that comes back, you'll be the first person we call. That's a very different thing from somebody who's like, you know, we were kind of on the fence about them anyway.
Yep.
And we're going to let them go. So it would be crazy to treat Fred the same way we're treating somebody else who we were like, you know, probably they were kind of on the fence.
Pat, I learned this from you, but basically anytime we're having a conversation, we turn it into a 2x2 matrix. And I think as we're having this conversation, I'm like, oh, you know what it is? It's a 2x2 matrix. And on one side, on the y-axis is performance and the x-axis is fit, cultural fit. And it's like, hey, if there's a poor performer in the bottom left corner, if there's a poor performer that's a bad cultural fit, they're on the chopping block. The question then becomes, obviously you want to keep everybody in the upper right, which is high performer, great fit. And then what happens is this, what do we value next? Do we value the performer, that is a low cultural fit, or do we value the cultural fit that's maybe not quite performing? And more often than not, I think people go to, we're going to stick with performance because it's an economic recession or we need that person. And what it does when you hire the cultural or when you fire the cultural fits in a layoff, it sends a message to everybody else that was in that top right bucket that says, oh, I thought you were serious about our culture. And it turns out you really only value that performance.
Right. And I don't want to be Pollyanna-ish about this because there's people listening to this that might be like, hey, sometimes the reality is there's some people that we need to keep and there's other people. And that should be more based on what their skill set is and how it fits into the business. In general, I completely agree with you, Cody. Choose the people that are cultural fits. There are going to be times when you're going to say, he's a cultural fit or she's a cultural fit, but we don't have jobs for them. And this other skill set, they're a little less of a cultural fit, but because of the impact they might have, I know that sometimes life doesn't work out black and white, neat and tidy all the time. Mm-hmm. However, you need to be intentional about that and you need to understand why you're doing that. So I don't want to make it sound like it's that easy, but it's certainly better than if you just do a clean sweep in regard to this. But I want to get to what you were just saying, Cody, because this is probably the most important thing we want to say is, when you make the wrong decision, the impact that it has on what you're left with afterward is huge. And that doesn't even have to do with, because remember we talked about onboarding before? We need to be offboarding well. And the person we choose to offboard and the way we offboard them has profound impacts on their lives, those people, on the survivors. Not only the survivors and how they feel that whether they're guilty or how they feel productive, but how they view the company where they work and the reputation of our company out in the market. Because I'll tell you what, these companies that are laying people off coldly, and I've heard like marketing manager, 15 years at the company, got an email, a generic email saying you're gone. I don't think there's ever, ever, ever an excuse for that.
Yeah. What you're hitting on, Pat, we just talked about like how you would go about identifying the people. But what you just said, I think this is the biggest difference is like the level of vulnerability and transparency from the leader. I've seen this happen two ways. I've seen a leader very much in a difficult spot around like, hey, the company is not as profitable as we want it to be, doing all hands meetings saying, we're going to do everything we can to keep every job that we can. And we need everyone rallying around this idea. And then when it comes time to maybe have to cut, they showed an equal amount of vulnerability and transparency. And that humility to be able to get on a Zoom call or an all hands meeting and say, I'm so sorry this is happening. We've done everything we can as a company to keep everyone. It's sort of outside of our control at this point. And here's how we went about it. And you know, like how you go about it sends a message to the people that stay and to the rest of the world, quite frankly.
Hey, there's people that have been laid off from companies and it was done so well that they leave and they say, I love that company. I still vouch for that company. I go to work for that company again. I understand how it happened. And there's others that are like, I would do anything to hurt that company and I will never speak highly of them again. For those that are not terribly idealistic, that should frighten them into being more idealistic.
So I have two questions about your interesting little 2x2 matrix there, Cody. And you've alluded to one of them, but it's just a little too cute. Nice try, Cody. I mean, yeah. You're almost an inventor. That. You're really coming along. That's no. What I'm curious about is that person who you do have to let go. And maybe you have to let go because you have to cut 10% of people. And maybe it's just time to let them go. Specifically, I'm talking about the person you let go because they're not a cultural fit. Pat, should you be honest to the rest of your team about why you let them go?
Absolutely. Hey, there's a place, if you can do it well, and this is an art, not a science, where it might actually be helpful to, when you're letting that person go, to go, you know something? You did a good job here. I think there's other organizations that you'll be better at. I think this is some of the things that I think were hard for you here. And I really want you to find an organization where you're going to be a match because you're a great guy. But I think there's probably other places where you'll be happier. And I honestly believe this layoff will result ultimately in you being really happy. Now, that's dicey sometimes, depending on what it is. But absolutely, you should say to the people that are there, we wanted to use this as this very difficult situation as an opportunity to strengthen our culture. And that's why you're here. And then you need to say, but we're going to treat those people that left so well. We don't want you to ghost them. We don't want you to avoid them. We want you to call them, check in on them, offer to help them. In fact, we're going to do anything we can to make their transition better. Now, I can just see like the CFO of a cold-hearted company saying, we're not in a good place. We have to lay people off. Why would we spend extra money on giving them an opportunity to... And it's like, because, first of all, because it's the right thing to do. But secondly, it's going to hurt our reputation. The productivity of the employees that are going to stay is going to be so much lower, and their loyalty is going to be so much lower. What a stupid thing to do, to treat people that you're letting go poorly, because it is going to impact the way people see your own company. People talk about a company as a brand. I like to talk about a company's mirror brand, and that's how the company sees itself.
Wow.
And the mirror brand is going to take a massive hit. And that's even more important than your external brand.
You know, that being honest to the people who are the survivors, the folks, the eight members of the team who didn't get let go, about why you let that other person go. I think the general prevailing wisdom is, oh no, because of HR, and we want to protect them, so we're just not going to say anything. But as we all know, if two people get divorced or break up or something happens and you don't say anything, we all fill in the gap with the worst possible scenario. Either we think way less of that person than we would need to, or we think way less of the leader who made the decision, and we just fill in the gap with misinformation. And so, of course, there is probably some legal things that we need to be attentive to and how we say that. But generally, when you choose to be honest, you actually build trust with the folks who are left and actually are able to give dignity to that person as they're leaving.
Yeah. I think one of the most important things you can say, like, cause Karen just wrote me a great note, and that's like, so let's say you're a middle manager and the company told you who you had to lay off. They're like, half of your department, or this is what are you? You run three departments. Yeah. They laid one off. You should get up in front of people and the people you let go. And you should say, I didn't have influence over this. I'm really sorry. It's painful for me to be involved in this. I wish I had some input, and I didn't know how they went about it, and it's horrible, and I'm sorry. And I know people think, well, words are cheap, but when you don't have influence over something, the last thing a person wants you to do is go, oh, well, that's just the way it is. I think you need to say, I'm really sorry. What you don't want to do, though, is make it about you. Remember that guy who laid people off a few years ago, and he did a thing, and he cried and talked about how hard it was for him, and people were just like, dude, you know? Because however you're feeling, you're supposed to take that as a leader. You could say, I'm sorry for you, but you're not looking for sympathy from them. That's crazy.
Now, people remember how you behave in important moments and milestones. And that doesn't necessarily feel fair. You wish that you were remembered for the day-to-day ways that you had integrity and made good decisions. But the truth is, it's emotional to watch your colleague pack up their desk, right? Or you're going to remember that moment of when you got the email. And so you get to cement the culture in your people. You get to reinforce it by the way that you make these decisions.
Oh, I was going to ask you guys a question, and I don't know if the answer to this is, but I'm not a lawyer or an HR person, but I don't know why people get marched out or in the middle of the night they get cut off and they don't get to come back, and somebody boxes up their stuff. I mean, I know that there's going to be some lawyers and HR people that go, well, they're going to sabotage the company or something like that. I think that you're creating the kind of people that would want to sabotage your company when you assume they're going to do that. Yeah. When I see companies let people go and go, oh yeah, you could take a couple of days to move out and say goodbye to people. And yeah, this is coming. I think for every person that might take advantage of that, there's 1,000 that wouldn't. And they're going to say, thank you for treating me like a human being. Because you trusted me for the last 15 years or 5 years. Suddenly I'm a pariah. What do you guys think? Am I being Pollyanna-ish?
No, I think that there's absolute like a human behavioral part of this. It's like, if someone's treating you like a criminal, you're more likely to act like a criminal, you know, in the sense that, like you said, for 15 years, I had all my access codes to all of our, all of our passwords, to all of our information. And I get it. Someone can be disgruntled as they're leaving work. But if you dignify them on the way out and you do this in a transparent, vulnerable way, I think the risk is much lower. This is why it's so interesting to have, you obviously want good legal advice, but lawyers are not the leaders of the company. And there's a good reason for that, because they would lead like a lawyer to mitigate risk. And so the idea that you're actually, this is a time for leading, and leading is about vulnerability and caring for the humans that were under your care. I think it goes to your idea of the motive, Pat. Like, what was your motive for leading in the first place? And when times get tough, this is going to be really difficult for you. And you can't just abdicate that and say, well, HR said, or the lawyer said, I couldn't have this conversation or tell you why we were doing this.
Yeah. And, it's so funny because we don't see ourselves as heroes working at a company, but there's a heroic moment where you can say, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. And yes, Mr. and Mrs. Lawyer, I get it. Yes, Mr. and Mrs. HR person. I think the HR person would often probably want to do the right thing, but it's say, we're going to say, no, we would rather take a risk. Now, if you're working in biotech and somebody's going to steal your secrets, or you're in the military and somebody's going to, but most of the time it's like, really, really, do we think somebody's going to do that? I would rather err on the side of human dignity and our core values and the reputation that we want to have than I would on the side of preventing one minor security risk. And I think that so often, I think that's what Google just has been doing. I can't imagine how I would feel if I'd worked there for the last 15 years and nobody bothered to call me and tell me what was going on.
I don't know that I'm going to totally disagree, but I think that there is a difference between saying, okay, we've made the decision to let that person go, so we are going to turn off their access to data, to the legal records, to people's file, whatever that is. I think that there's industries where that seems very, very reasonable to me. But I think the difference is when you turn off their connection to people. And so I don't work at Google. Nobody would accuse me of being a technologist. I can understand why they would turn off some of the access to technology. It's when they do the fail soup of now saying, and you can't be connected to your people, that I think that lacks courage. That lacks the stones.
Well, you can't even come into work to say goodbye.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, most people would understand if you said, hey, we're going to need to shut down your access to this database just because. Yeah.
I think most people would understand that too. And I think leaders are afraid of the 1 out of 15 times that they would bump into the hallway and that person would make them feel really uncomfortable and make them feel bad. But Cody, I love what you said is this is a time for leading. And what leaders do is they're present. And a leader does have to be able to stand there and embrace the tension of empathy and resolve to be able to say, I am so sorry. This is really hard. And to be able to stand there solidified in the decision. And I think most leaders would rather hide behind their desk and know I'm not going to have to bump into Janet in the hallway. So I'm not going to, because I'm just not going to let her in the building. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. And I just think people are doing the calculation, the economic calculation of that wrong. They're like, oh, we're going to do this to be safe. And then what you do is you terminate a bunch of people at the same time that will then go out in the world and talk about how poorly you handled that situation. It actually, how much would it actually, if you could put a dollar amount to that woman who was 15 years at a certain organization who just woke up and found out that she was cut off, the damage it would do just in her own personal life to like say, oh, that's a bad company. They didn't treat me the right way on the way out. I mean, I just feel like the calculus is off on that about the risk versus reward of that. And then I would say that that's why it matters how you do it is sort of like, in the NFL, when a player finds out that they're traded because they see it on Twitter this is kind of the same experience. It's like, hey, you knew you were in that room at the top of the building discussing layoffs. And it's okay for you to say, hey, we're wrestling through this and want to do it the right way. And we're going to do everything we can to keep as many people as we can. But if the first time that you're being told that you're not a part of the company anymore is because your badge doesn't work to get inside the door, that's just not, like you said, Pat, you should do it because it's the right thing, regardless of what the legal ramifications are.
Yeah. You know, I have two stories. It's great from sports. I know of a guy, I kind of know this guy, famous guy, who played for a football team, and he was really good friends with the coach, him and his wife, because the coach was very young and he was a veteran. And they socialized with the coach and his wife. And so they were good friends. And he found out he was getting cut from the team because he walked up to his locker and there was a note said, go give your stuff to the equipment guy. He was like, dude. And that, I know of another guy that was the general manager of the Giants, a great guy, the baseball team. And when they decided it was time to trade a player, they would go meet with the player and they'd say, hey, help us figure out what team you'd like to play for. And so You're not going to be gone right away. We want you to help, and we're going to negotiate with the teams you want us to. We're going to involve you in that process because we're really interested in you landing in a really good place. And the players loved this guy, and the other players on the team loved how they handled it, and they played for the. It's just such a different way to look at things.
Yeah, And imagine like the translation. Like, let's say there was a great engineer that worked at like a high performing engineer that worked at this company. I love that team analogy because when the economy changes and now we're growing again, you want them to come back. And the way that you handle how they left is the determining factor. So the player that found out that the coach was at dinner and didn't tell them, do you think he would ever want to go play for that coach ever again? No. You know, and that's why I think the calculus is just wrong.
Or when another player says, hey, should I accept a trade to that team? It's like, no way.
Totally.
Yeah, and it creates an undercurrent of fear among everybody else.
Yeah.
And it's hard for everybody else to stay totally engaged if they know you could just be cut in that moment.
Oh, and there's another story I have to tell. Years ago, I worked for a company that did layoffs, and the senior executive in charge of the division where I worked, he left under the cover of darkness. It was a little bit controversial. And so the head of HR for the company was literally walking the halls and just laying people off at random. And I remember, because he would walk up to somebody and go, hey, come here, go get your resume. And somebody would go, what? And they'd walk out in the hall and they'd hand it to the guy. And he'd look at it and go, yeah, you don't have a job anymore. You should go home. So I went to the new executive that I knew was going to be taking over. And I said, hey, do you want me to work for you still? He goes, yeah, but take the stairs down, drive home. Don't come back to work for a few days. I'll call you. I don't want the HR guy to find you because he might lay you off.
No way.
I joke about that because it was a real story. It sounded like a bad movie. And that's not a good way to handle a layoff. That was not.
That's wild. You know, I have a thought related to layoffs, and I'm curious if you guys think it's connected. And that is, I remember reading this stat that like 94% of managers wished that the last person that they had fired, they'd fired them sooner. And I think it is really unfortunate that a lot of these companies are going through layoffs, and that, you know, we see things on our news feed about tens of thousands of people being laid off. It's awful. We have empathy for those people. I've been fired before. That's no fun. And there are a lot of people listening that know that there's somebody that they probably should fire now that's in the bottom part of that quadrant that's not a cultural fit or a performance fit and kind of hanging on and lingering on. And this is an opportunity to be able to, number one, maybe get ahead of when you would have to do layoffs to get rid of somebody who's not a fit. And to do that reinforcement about your values, about what you care about. You don't have to just wait until a crisis to be able to let people go. We should be doing that regularly enough to reinforce the culture that we want.
Well, that's often why we get in a position where we have to do layoffs, is because we have so many employees, many of whom are not productive, many of whom we don't really want there, but we think, well, the numbers look pretty good. Well, that's a trailing indicator, right? Because eventually it catches up and then we're laying off the wrong people because we're doing it in such, you know, huge swaths. So that's a great point to end on there, Bo. Matt, you have a couple of things you need to say before we cut off, right?
Yes. The first thing that I wanted to mention is that yesterday I may or may not have posted the latest Working Genius episode to the wrong podcast. So it went up on At the Table. If you were one of the 8,000 people that listened to that before I took it down and put it on the right podcast, I don't know. Sorry. You're welcome. Hope you enjoyed it.
It was a great tactic to cross promote our podcast, Matt. That was an incredible marketing scheme.
Yeah, I'm surprised I haven't accidentally done that sooner after probably uploading 200 episodes.
Matt, I actually listened to the podcast and didn't know I was listening to it on the wrong feed because I said, I wonder if this one went well. So I listened to the first 2 minutes of it. I didn't even notice. So,
yeah. All right. My second order of business is that in the link of this episode, a couple episodes ago, we mentioned a tool called on the episode, Start With Yourself. So we created a handout that's kind of a personal audit about where you are in your professional, personal life using Working Genius and other factors. And that handout that we created is going to be linked in the description of this episode if you'd like to check that out.
And then I think we have one last thing, don't we, Matt? Don't we have an unpaid advertisement?
We do. And today we're going to be doing an unpaid ad for Ram trucks.
Yes, right? We are.
Cody, you have a Ram truck. Matt, you have a Ram truck. I've driven a Ram truck. Karen's husband is going to be buying a Ram truck. Bo, what is your problem?
I have a Ford 2003 F-250, and my truck can beat up all of your trucks. Okay.
I got the Ram truck because Tracy has a Ram truck. I don't know why we all do, but it is so comfortable. When I would rather drive that than any other car. I drove it once for like 13 hours in a row. I got out and I wasn't sore at all.
It's been great. My kids are trying to ruin it rapidly, but we're enjoying it while it's still nice.
Very nice. All righty. That's an ad for Ram trucks. All righty, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Cody, Bo, Matt, thank you. Karen, we will talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.